And it's time for our Lily White Spotlight feature this morning. And over the last number of weeks, we have visited Ballymore Eustace, Alan Wood and Ardclough to speak to some of the local people there and community groups, etc. And this morning, we're going to the rural village of Rathcoffey, where on the line is Pat Pender of the Zero Waste Community Garden, Rathcoffey, and a long-time resident there in the village as well. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad, and thanks for joining us on our Lily White Spotlight this morning. You're not originally from Rathcoffey, originally a Cara man, but you moved out to Rathcoffey a good number of years ago. What attracted you to the area?
Well, at that time, we were looking for a council house, and the offer we got after waiting about 6 years was here in Rathcoffey, and we took it. And it was quite a good move. It's a lovely house, very small but lovely, just the two of us here. And we're quite happy here.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous little village, I have to say, and there's lovely. A great community spirit within it. Tell us a little bit about it and what the local amenities are like in Rathcoffey.
Well, of course, we have the GA, which would be the main one, I suppose. And then we have our school and we have our church, we have our local pub here, and then we have our very famous community garden.
Indeed, and Farrington's is the pub, Pat. One thing that always strikes me about Farrington's, and I'm not sure if it's still the case, but it used to be a shop in one side and a pub in the other, which was kind of a little bit, rare to see nowadays.
Yeah, well, it was like that in the old days, an old shop. You had a pub on one side and a grocery on the other. But it would have been probably one of the last to operate like that, you know. And then we have, as you come in from the Kilcock Road there, there's a thatched house as on your right. And that used to be a little small shop.
Really?
Shop and things like that. And then when you came to the corner, the bad corner, heading from Maynooth, there was a shop in that shop as well, in that house as well. So they had that three facilities there that time.
Right.
And that'd be in probably the early 70s anyway.
Yeah, the little thatched cottage, is that the one there just after Painstown Cross?
At Painstown Cross there, yeah.
Right, before the GAA. Gorgeous little house it is.
Yes, very, very well maintained now.
Yeah, and obviously the GAA club as well, just in there on the right-hand side, and a growing GAA club it is, and great facilities. Yeah. The likes of bingo, etc. takes place there in the clubhouse.
Oh, that's where all the ladies go, and a few gentlemen, I'm sure, on a Monday night.
Come here, tell us a bit about the community garden then in Rathcoffey, Pat, how you set up there in Moortown Drive.
Well, I suppose about 5 years ago, after I retired, I was kind of doing nothing, and there was about an acre and a quarter, an acre and a half of ground lying idle there. And I was a part of the Residents Association, and I brought it up at a meeting one night that maybe we'd try and get approval to set up a community garden. So it was agreed there, and then we went along to the council, who jumped at it, took it in, and ran with it, really, in a big way, you know. So in 2018, we got kind of started at it. And that year then, late that year, probably around November, late November, we decided we'd enter an Energy Get Ireland Growing competition with a wonderful prize of €5,000. And as it happened, we won it. And it was a big help. And since then, we have won another award, and we have also won three international green flags for communities organised by Antashka.
Yeah, and I went out and visited the garden last summer, and you gave me the exclusive guided tour, which I was delighted to get, Pat. But for those maybe who are not aware what exactly it is, tell us a bit about it.
Well, it's a garden of about 26 or 27 plots, which are not enough. There's people still looking. We have our hens, we have ducks, we have bees, we have wildlife pond, which the ducks have taken over, and we have all sorts of amenities. We teach people to grow their own food, and we're hoping to be able to help out people with disabilities by putting in wheelchair gardens and things like that, you know.
And people can travel from far and wide to the community garden, and every now and again you have kind of a fair in Clane GAA, do you?
Yeah, we have a market then the last Sunday of every month in Clane GAA. the profits then go to the kind of running of the garden, like insurance and all that type of thing, you know, and any maintenance on sheds or whatever we need to do. Like we produce all our own electricity here by solar power, and we harvest all our own rainwater. So we're totally dependent on nature here for everything.
Yeah, and it's completely voluntary as well. Those who work Absolutely. At it and, you know, who look after the garden, they're doing it on a voluntary basis. How many of you are involved?
Yeah. Well, they're very at the time of the year. Like the winter time would be very busy, but then during the summertime and the spring and on into the harvest, people would be here all the time. But we have two gentlemen here on the CE scheme, Rob from Kildare, and we have Khalil, who is from Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And they're here, they do their 19 and a half hours each, you know, about 2.5 days a week. And they are a huge, it wouldn't be where it is today or as good as it is today if it wasn't for both of those gentlemen.
Right.
And I'm just a pleasure to mention them there, you know.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And yeah, I have to say I was very, very impressed when I went to view it and have a look around at it there at Moortown Drive. It's open to anybody to pop in.
When we were judged this last year for the Green Flag, the judge was hugely impressed with the fact that it was open, that there was open access to it. There was no fence and no gates or nothing. Nobody was locked out, you know.
Yeah.
The only fence in there is to keep her hens and ducks in from going out into the gardens where the cats are.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I'm sure a lot of people are kind of following suit as well, and it's sparked a lot of people to think about maybe buying organically, and the fact that you have zero waste as well is great. Yeah. Back to the village then of Rathcoffey, and just to come full circle and finish up on it then, Pat, I know there's a lot of history in the area. Seamus Cullen there has done quite a lot of writing on the history of the area, Rathcoffey Castle, etc., the old school, the old church, the old buildings there. You've settled in now quite well since you moved there, and there is a great community spirit.
Kind of part of the furniture. Yes, it is actually quite good. And it's, you know, we get together and we kind of hammer out what we have to do and what has to be planned. I'm not on the resident association anymore now because things were too much, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a spring chicken anymore.
Listen, you're doing great work out there at the Zero Waste Community Garden in Rathcoffey. I would urge anybody, if you're in the area, to pop in. They're based in Moortown Drive, which is an estate there in the centre of Rathcoffey Village, down at the bottom of it. They have the last Sunday of every month, then they have that market in Clane GAA, and it's a great facility as well. And that's all part of our Lily White Spotlight feature, where we're going around to each and every town and village around the county every Tuesday morning, just after 10 o'clock. And that is our look at Rathcoffey Whistle Stop Tour to the rural village.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, I just see a story breaking and emerging in the Irish Independent this morning. Businessman Michael Stone has revealed that he paid for Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue's posters to be erected in the 2020 general election campaign. In his first comments on the controversy, Mr. Stone apologised for any embarrassment caused to the minister. He has also decided to resign from his role on the Land Development Agency and the North Inner City Task Force. The Designer Group chief executive says he mistakenly said Donoghue did not provide any, or he did not provide any Donoghue support in 2020. He said he has known Pascal Donoghue for a number of years and has always held him in high regard for his work done both as a minister and as an elected representative for Dublin Central, which includes the community where he was born and brought up. Mr. Stone added, "I have worked closely with him to support the regeneration of Dublin's North Inner City, and I know him to be a man of honour and to be committed to public service." Mr. Stone confirmed he paid to have posters put up in 2016 but didn't know that they had to be declared. So that's news just emerging there. Businessman Michael Stone revealing he paid for Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue's posters to be erected in the 2020 general election campaign, and that's written by Philip Ryan this morning. I also see that teacher Enoch Burke has turned turned up at his old school again days after he was dismissed following chaotic scenes at a disciplinary meeting. Mr. Burke arrived in an SUV driven by his father at around 8:30 this morning at Wilson's Hospital School in Multifarnham in County Westmeath. His father then came out of the school gates around 5 minutes later and drove away, but Enoch Burke remains in the school. This is written by Conor Feehan and Shane Phelan this morning. Mr. Burke was dismissed from his post at Wilson's Hospital School late last week. A statement on Friday on his behalf to the Irish Independent confirmed his employment had been terminated, and the move came a day after a disciplinary meeting attended by the teachers and members of his family descended into what's been described as chaos. But there we have it, Enoch Burke turning up at the school once again this morning. Let's move on then to maybe local issues once again and addressing the crisis in the health service in North Kildare. Sinn Féin TD Raida Cronin has told the Dáil that Sinn Féin has a plan to address capacity in beds, emergency and elective surgery and in personnel, be it in nurses, doctors or other vital healthcare workers. And Raida Cronin is on the line now. Good morning, Raida.
Good morning, Owen.
Sinn Féin have all the answers here, Raida, it would seem.
Well, we certainly are trying to solve the problem, and we have answers. What we need now in healthcare is radical reform. Sinn Féin believes that we can deliver more beds, and we can train more healthcare workers, and we can offer those healthcare workers as well a full time job in the HSE when they have completed their studies. And I know from talking to David Cullinan as well that David Cullinan wants to be a reforming Minister of Health, and he wants to be able to hold the HSE to account and the Department of Health. And we really have to, you know, immediately what we have to do is make greater use of the current infrastructure that we have in the health service to, you know, like a lot of people have had their elective surgeries cancelled. You know, we believe they should be, so we're not, you know, I believe in healthcare for all at the point of, you know, at the point of need. But, you know, if we have to use the private hospitals to make sure that people aren't left in pain or in agony, we have to do that now, because we don't want to be building up more problems for the future. So we've had 2 decades of what you could only call negligence, really, and it's just come home to roost now at the moment. Instead of ending the scandal of patients and trolleys, Fine Gael have made it worse. Like last summer, we had a summer trolley crisis. That was unheard of up till now.
Okay, so what are these solutions here, Raida? What are the actual solutions that need to be implemented in order to alleviate this crisis?
Well, we have to train more people, and Rose Conway Walsh, our spokesperson for higher education, has been talking to Simon Harris about this, as have I indeed in the Dáil, about making more spaces. You know, we were talking about dentistry there last week. I had a youngster in Maynooth who got the points for dentistry, but there wasn't enough places available because they're making too many places available for overseas students who are charged the earth for places. So we have to make sure that we're training enough people locally so that they can, they're more, you know, an Irish person is more likely to stay in Ireland when they complete their studies and come out fully trained. So we have to start looking, stop thinking in single policy areas. We have to have a kind of a more modern way of looking at how people are living and want to live. You know, when we were up there outside the Naas General Hospital on Saturday, and some of the nurses and the healthcare workers came out to us for a chat, and they were delighted to see that we were highlighting this. We have to stop thinking in single policy areas. You know, so many nurses, young nurses who have qualified, young doctors who have qualified, you know, the housing crisis is having a lock-on effect in our health crisis. They can't afford to rent or buy, so they're you know, emigration is looking more attractive to them.
Right. Okay. So training up more doctors, more nurses. That's one aspect of it. Then, what about increasing the capacity of our beds? And because training up doctors is not going to make more room.
Yes, and that's all of voluntary care. You know, you might have heard the the Taoiseach explained to us that it's not just about buying beds down in Bargain Town, that we have to have the healthcare workers to go with them. There are talk about condescending, as if the Irish people don't know that it's not just a question of plunking a few beds in a ward. They have to be staffed. But we also have to be able to hold the HSC to account. You know, we had our first meeting with the HSC there.
Let's talk about the capacity issues here first of all, though, because Sinn Féin are saying here that they have this plan to build capacity in health services. So with the actual bed capacity, how are we going to get additional beds in here? How are we going to expand the hospitals?
Well, if you look at the the average amount of people that are on trolleys every day, there's around 600 on average. And there's also on average around 600 people who are waiting to be discharged from hospital, waiting to go into community care. So we have to build community care as well. We have to get more social workers. We have to get more community healthcare workers in the community. And we have a plan to do that. And we have to, you know, if you were able to get those 600 people out of hospital and into care in the community, we would have that availability. There wouldn't be 600 people on trolleys. But we have to make sure that we're building capacity for the future. We have a growing population, thank God. We need to make sure we actually have less people working in the healthcare system now than we did two decades ago. Like, that's just crazy.
Okay. Has Sinn Féin and David Cullinan sat down and, you know, costed all of this and looked at it and said that this is actually feasible? So, for example, in a couple of years' time, if we're looking at a Sinn Féin government, David Cullinan is the Minister for Health, he's not going to be looking back and regretting what he said, or Sinn Féin won't be regretting what they said when you come out and say, we have all the answers here and we're going to sort this health problem.
No, I can tell you Sinn Féin are ready to go into government. We wanted to be in government. You know, the worst thing that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the Greens with them have done is they have normalised bad service. They have normalised bad public service. They have normalised inequality in the health service. They're lowering our expectations all the time. You know, we're a very wealthy country. We're a small country. We're a very manageable country. And, you know, we don't have to have bad service normalised. And Sinn Féin will absolutely tackle that. You know, we want to be, David Cullinan wants to be able to hit the ground running. He has been to Naas General Hospital with me there a few months ago. He's going to all the hospitals across the state, meeting management, meeting workers there, meeting nurses, meeting doctors, meeting the management as well, and so that he's ready to do that. That's what we want to do.
Right, and it's all being costed, and this is a reasonable plan that's set out by Sinn Féin, and it would be able to be implemented.
Yes, we will. You know, what David Cullinan wants to be, he wants to be seen as a reforming health minister, not just, you know, plodding along the way we are dealing with crises that come up day to day. You know, he wants to have a plan for the next, you know, for a 5-year term, if that's what we hope to get. And he wants to just let healthcare workers know, you know, just to keep the faith that he has a plan, you know, and that, you know, to bear with us, to, you know, for everybody to do their best and to build a republic that we can be actually proud of, instead of this normalisation of bad service, which is all we're getting from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Okay, that's Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North. Rhéida Cronin, thanks for joining us. Rhéida, good morning to you. Sinn Féin saying that it has a multi-annual plan to build capacity in the health service. Let me know what you think of that. 0833 97 97 97. Would you be convinced from a Sinn Féin point of view? Do you think maybe the government are doing all they can at the moment? Can they do more? Let me know. 0833 97 97 97. One listener in says that lots of wonderful sound bites there, but waffle as usual, according to that listener. Also, back to the public lighting issue there in Lakeside Park in Newbridge. We heard from Newbridge resident Tom O'Riordan calling for street lights to be installed there. Another listener here says it's the same in Park Wirra. No lights along where the flats are in Park Wirra. And also, going back here, there was a birthday request that came in a little bit earlier. We'd like to wish our daughter, Kira Darcy, a big happy 10th birthday today from her parents, sisters Rachel, Laura, and little brother Patrick. So, Kira Darcy, have a great day.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare KFM.
All right, Paddy in Salins called in as well and says Raida and Sinn Féin think that they can wave a magic wand. It's easy to be in opposition, but not as easy to be in government. Keep those messages coming in, 0833 97 97 97. Let's go back to the Selbridge Leixlip area then. Social Democrats Councillor Nuala Killeen joins us. Morning, Nuala.
Good morning, Owen, and good morning to your listeners.
You've been raising local issues then with Kildare County Council, and first of all, you wanted the council to review estate management plans for all housing estates in the municipal district.
Yes, I think estate management is a very important aspect of the function of the local authority in respect of what it covers. It covers the allocation scheme for social housing and also the associated antisocial behaviour strategy, which manages problems where they might arise. Now, I just want to underpin that by saying that most tenants are hard-working, good tenants, but, you know, problems arise in a very, very small percentage of cases. But obviously, it's very important to have a strategy to cover that. And obviously it's covered under the Housing Miscellaneous Provisions Act 2014. Now, the context of why I wanted to raise these issues was because in the newer estates, there's, you know, it's easy if you just have one housing estate that's all local authority units. You know, it's easy enough to know the process of filling out the form, sending it through to the tenant liaison officers or raise a query that way. But where the units are now mixed, you know, there might be leased units or approved housing body units in a private estate, the residents were coming to me with queries, well, who do we raise any queries or concerns with? And it was just in that context I'd raise the issue. So the clarification really is that the same form is used. The queries go to the local authority and then they assist tenants with any queries or concerns that they may have. Now, both policies, the allocation scheme and the antisocial behaviour strategy, are under review at the moment. So they're being dealt with by the Housing SPC. So that's why they're kind of topical at the moment, and in the context of newer estates being mixed estates, we just needed to kind of drill down, well, how are these things being managed? And sometimes where there might be issues concerning people living in different estates, that was one kind of aspect of the query. That is a public order issue and it's a Garda matter if a problem may arise. Now, there are forums for councillors to discuss issues, and there's very good relationships developed with community Gardaí and TLOs and things like that. So it wasn't that the issue isn't under control. It was just in the context of the newer emerging communities, you know, how are we managing that? So that was the context in which I raised this.
Okay, you had kind of a similar issue then raised, or again, it was to do with arrangements, maintenance arrangements for council houses in the municipal district there. What response did you get in
exactly,
relation to that?
Exactly, and it was similar context in the aspect of the new estates that it might, you know, that are mixed tenancies and privately owned and whatever, where people were kind of approaching me in clinics and saying, well, there might be a repair issue and, you know, who do I approach to manage that? And where the management companies might have said, oh, it's a council issue, and the council might have, you know, said, oh, we manage the aspects of the issues regarding maintenance that are inside the property. And then, of course, if a property is brand new, you might have a guarantee if we just pick a window, for example, you might have, you know, 1 year guarantee, and that might be the developer that might manage that. So it was just really a bit of confusion of, well, if I am a tenant and I have a query or concern, who do I approach in the first instance to remedy my query? So it was kind of a managing the customer service approach, and sometimes there was a bit of confusion. Like, obviously, when something is new, you know, communities are just finding their feet. They're kind of, you know, once people are clear on the process, for example, things settle down and people are much happier, and you can signpost people in a better and more efficient way. And it was really just finding out, well, what is the minutiae of referring and signposting people in the new context of these mixed estates.
Okay, and finally then, Nuala, did you get an update on Confey Cemetery? I believe that's prone to flooding issues, and maybe there was also a need to look at capacity there.
Yeah, now capacity has been an issue for at least 8, if not 10 years. And I know the council have been working on it that long. There is an issue with the high water tables up in that, you know, that land area, which impacts the current condition of people who are buried there. And it's just, even when I had occasion to visit myself over Christmas and after Christmas, the flooding seems to be a lot worse. And I thought that there had been flooding mitigation measures taken a couple of years ago following a flooding report, and I didn't see the impact of that, and there hadn't been any significant rainfall. And I actually think that I'll have to revisit that aspect of the query, because they kind of dealt with the aspect of capacity more than the flooding, do you know what I mean? So, but capacity is of utmost concern to most people. You know, get asked once a week, when is Comfrey Cemetery going to expand? But they're going to try and accommodate additionality there with a bit of space they have up there. But I think that it'd be helpful if the local authority moved on confirming a new site for a new and expanded cemetery. So that would be helpful.
Okay, and just before I let you go, actually, Nuala, just a message literally just came in on the WhatsApp there to say, I'm living in a Kildare County Council house in Leixlip, and I've been fighting for 8 years and I'm getting nowhere. That's obviously in relation to one of the earlier motions that you referenced there. Not entirely sure of the context there, but I might say if that listener wants to get in contact with you directly, it might be the best way to do it, Nuala.
Absolutely, feel free. Yeah, we, you know, we do clinics every day. We deal with queries of this type every day. So please feel free to contact me. If they're having a barrier in getting a response from the local authority, we can help in whatever way we can.
Okay, I'll pass on your details to that listener there. And that is Social Democrats councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, Nuala Killeen. Thanks for your time this morning, Nuala. And to that listener that text in, I'll get back to you on the WhatsApp in the next 10 minutes or so with some contact details. So thanks for getting in touch with us. In the meantime, James Durney, local historian, is on the line. Morning, James.
Good morning, Owen.
You're looking for information, James, on Tintown and the Newbridge internment camps during the Civil War for a new project that you're working on. And in particular, you're looking for photographs. But you might tell us a little bit about Tintown and the internment camps, firstly.
Yeah, actually, we're a decade of commemorations. They're working on two projects at the moment. My colleague, Carol Kiley, is looking for information and photographs on members of Cumann na Mban from County Kildare. And in conjunction with that, I'm working on a project on the Tintown and Newbridge Barracks internment camps during the Civil War, as you said. And we seem to have difficulty in getting photographs for Tintown and Newbridge because there was no cameras, of course, allowed in. Unlike the Rath internment camp, which, if you remember, we covered in 1921, a couple of Kildare prisoners even had cameras smuggled in and were taking photographs within the camps. So the provisional government were well on top of it by this stage, and there was no, as far as I know, there was no cameras smuggled into the camp. So there was very little photographs of what they actually looked like when they were in internment camps. So that's what we were hoping, that people might turn up with photographs or even stories of people who were interned. There are autograph books, all right, but they don't give you a good picture of the camp as much as a photograph would.
Right, and what are you hoping that the end project is going to be? Is it going to be put into a book form, or what's the situation there?
Oh, yeah, definitely book form for both projects when we're finished. I'll be working on the internment camps, really as a follow-up to the one I did on internment in 1921 with the Rath internment camp. And Carol will be working on the Cumann na Mban project then as well. It's just so that it'll be available then for everybody to be able to research or read about. And especially like the Tintown, like last year we covered the Newbridge Barracks escape when 112 prisoners escaped from Newbridge Barracks. And today actually is the 100th anniversary of the completion of Tintown internment camp. So a nice day for a phone call just to... as a reminder.
Absolutely, Where was that, James, Tintown?
It would be in the Curragh. It was old former British stables, actually.
Right.
With galvanised roof and galvanised walls and that, hence the name Tintown. But they were converted then to hold internees. And it would be where the old cavalry workshops are now in the Curragh camp, if anyone's familiar. There's no sign of them now at all. So that's... you know, that's what we're hoping, that maybe somebody might have a photograph from that period.
Right.
Because there was plenty of military police activity and guys guarding all these prisoners. Because you had 1,500 prisoners there and another 1,200 in Newbridge.
Yeah. So if anybody has any photographs, maybe that's been passed down through the family generations of internees that were in Tin Town or the Newbridge internment camp, get in touch with James Durney, or even stories, any information that you might have on a family member or somebody that you might know, then get in touch with James. What's the best way to do that, James?
Well, you can get me through my email, which is jdurney@kildareco.ie, which is jdurney@kildarecountycouncil.ie, really. You can get me on that email. Carol is the same. She's archivist@kildareco.ie, and you can reach either of us on those two emails. But again, it's like autograph books or even photographs of the people themselves that had been in the camp, you know, from that period. Like, there's over 80 or 90 prisoners from County Kildare were in Tin Town, and another 100 or 150 were in Newbridge Barracks as well. So photographs of these people from that period. And one of the most famous internees, I suppose, in, well, not him, but Michael D. Higgins' father was interned in Tin Town.
Really?
Internment camp in 1923. And when he came out, he couldn't get any work. And he actually worked in Cummins' bar in Newbridge and stayed there in Diggs before he returned to County Clare. Because when these guys came out, like, I mean, and you had 12,000 interns during the Civil War. And a lot of these guys couldn't get work when they came out. So a lot of them went to the emigrant boat rather than, when they couldn't find any work.
Yeah. Okay, very, very interesting. If anybody listening has information, then bring it to James Durney, no matter how small you think the information might be or any of the photographs that you have, and you could be contributing to that project that himself and Carol Kiley are working on as well. And that is James, local historian, looking for information on Tin Town and the Newbridge internment camps. Thanks for joining us, James, and good morning to you. Now, I see here Mick in Solins is in touch to say a quick question. Owen, how much is it into Croke Park for Kildare against Dublin on Saturday night? I was having a look there on social media over the last 24 hours. I think I saw a figure of between 15 and 20 euro, maybe 18 euro or thereabouts. Not entirely sure. We'll have to double check it. It all depends, of course, where you're going to be sitting. You know, it's not just a one price gets you in and you can sit wherever you want, as far as I'm aware, but around the 15 to 20 euro mark. Of course, if you're not going up to the match, we'll have full commentary here on KFM, in association with Hanlon Concrete Products of Robertstown. And speaking of GAA, on the line is Tara Byrne, KFM reporter, because news emerged yesterday that Tara won the LGFA Local Journalist of the Year Award for 2022. Good morning, Tara. Congratulations.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks a million. Thanks for that.
So, yeah, you've been, I suppose, representing KFM, working for us over the last number of years, particularly covering the ladies' football games in the league and the championship and some of the local club matches as well. How did this award come about, and were you surprised to get the news?
I was, to be perfectly honest. I actually, I've been doing football matches, and particularly ladies' football matches, I'd say, for in excess of 10 years now at this stage, and travelling length and breadth of the country and throughout league campaigns and championships. And thankfully we had one All-Ireland win in there in 2016 as well, and I managed to get to witness that. But yeah, I got news that I was nominated for the award back a couple of months ago, and you know yourself with these things, you kind of pay them no heed and you move on. There's a lot of competition for Local Journalist of the Year, I'm sure, throughout the whole country. And then about 10 days ago, I think I just was actually coming out of work and managed to get an email, and was absolutely taken by surprise, because as you can imagine, and as you've experienced yourself, there's a lot of stiff competition when it comes to journalism throughout Ireland, and there's a lot of very, very talented journalists working in the field, and particularly in ladies football over the last number of years.
Yeah, but I mean, it highlights as well, Tara, the work that's been done to promote the ladies' game in not only Kildare, but in the country as well, that, you know, we're covering maybe ladies' football a lot more on radio and newspapers, on television. More journalists are getting out now and getting to the games, and I'm sure you're seeing that in the press box yourself.
Absolutely. Only there at the weekend, we were covering Down versus Kildare and St. Connolly's, and there was five different people sitting there from three different journalists or three different newspapers and publications to cover a game. I remember going to games 5-6 years ago, actually even maybe 2-3 years ago, where you'd be the only journalist at the game. And it's unbelievable, and it really is a testament to both the Kildare County Board and in particular Donal Fitzpatrick, the work that he does in promoting ladies football. He actually makes your job 10 times easier with his press packs before games, match reports, team sheets, changes. It's absolutely phenomenal, the work that goes in behind the scenes with the county board. And it really does make our job so much easier in promoting the game.
Yeah, it does. And Donal is fantastic. And the Kildare LGFA board are brilliant as well with sending out fixtures, team news, results, etc. They're always one of the first in with that information. And as you say, makes our job a lot easier as well. Just before I let you go then, Tara, you were at the game at the weekend, which was Kildare's first game of the league campaign, getting off to a 3-13-6 point win against Down. You're going to be covering the rest of the games for KFM throughout the season, in the league and in the championship. Sure, you're looking forward to it as well. Diane O'Hara's first season at the helm. She was in as a selector last year, but taken over now as manager. And a great panel of players there too this season.
A fantastic panel of players. And to be honest, it was such an exciting game to be asked to see Kildare almost come full circle. The change in the team that I've even seen in the last 12 months has been phenomenal, with players coming back, new debuts, players coming up from the minor panel that have gone so far in the last couple of seasons. Unfortunately, didn't manage to clinch in All-Ireland. But the progress in Kildare football in even the last 12 months has been phenomenal and is nothing but exciting for what's to come this season. And no doubt, if they stick with Diane O'Hara and the plans that she has put in place to date, it will be a very, hopefully, silver-laden year for the Kildare team. But definitely sights are good after the first game against Down.
Indeed, and looking forward to the season as well. And the ladies out again at the weekend on Sunday at 2 o'clock at home to Longford. And Tara will be watching that game for us as well here on KFM. Tara, well done once again. Thanks for all the coverage that you've been doing for the Kildare ladies football team, both for the club and the county. Congratulations again, winning the LGFA Local Journalist of the Year for 2022, representing KFM. That's Tara Byrne.